Flip, 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 Flip Weekly.
Hello and welcome to the Flip Weekly podcast. My name is Matt. You're tuning into the world's best newsletter. No, it's a podcast. The world's best podcast about reselling. We go to garage sales, we go to thrift stores, we go to Facebook Marketplace, pickups. Where else do we go? We just find anything we can to resell online for a bit of money. You can do this as a side hustle. You can do it as a full-time job, but I probably wouldn't recommend it. I should go into it one day why I don't recommend doing this for a full-time job. Do it as a side hustle. You can make some money. You can make some beer money. Not a full-time job. You'll max out. I really don't recommend it. But I got an interesting issue for you this week, an interesting podcast episode. It is the most boring episode that I think we've ever done. And that's because the topics that we talk about, yes, we're making money, but we're talking about things like the world's most boring television show. And just to like keep things a bit more, I guess, boring, we're going to be watching an episode of that at the very end of this podcast. If you want to tune in, if you're listening, of course you're listening, you'll be listening to me reacting to this television show. We'll get into it a bit later. We also have some other interesting finds from this week. We have one of the best-selling games of the early 2000s that I was able to find in a Savers. We have a marketplace pickup we're going back in time to when vehicles had cassette tape players in them. You know, like, if that doesn't sound boring enough, I mean, I'm a dude. We also are talking about handbags. Like, fucking hell, what a boring episode we have this week. Should we just jump straight into it? I mean, I don't know what else we can talk about. Let's just jump straight into it. So this week, I was at a Vinnie's thrift store, and one of the biggest things that I hate about myself is when you go into a thrift store and you just walk past so much shit. You know, in most of these thrift stores, that's like the women's clothing is at the front. It's like they haven't taken that cue from Coles and Woolworths and other big retail stores where you put the most popular stuff towards the back. Why you walk into a Coles and you have to walk to the back of the store to get the milk, right? They haven't learnt that they should be putting the women's clothes right at the very fucking back, because that's where all the women would walk past everything else and might pick something up, right? They haven't learnt from that. So what I do in a thrift store is I ignore everything at the front. I ignore all of the women's stuff. I ignore, you know, the women's clothes, the women's shoes, the handbags, which is what we'll be talking about. And I just really, really hate that about myself. And I've in the past sort of changed how I am in the sense that I've bought makeup before. I don't know anything about makeup, but I've looked, I mean, I was standing in the makeup area in a Savers where all the grab bags are, just checking out the makeup, having no idea what I'm looking at. And I was able to find like this piece of foundation, like a bottle of foundation that was brand new and ended up selling for like $70, despite it only costing me like $8 in a bag. And, you know, I did that once and I'm like, well, what else can I buy? And, you know, last week I bought a huge bundle of Bratz dolls, with multiple of those dolls being worth hundreds and hundreds of dollars. There was two dolls combined that are listed up on eBay now for $1,000. And somebody actually asked me this week if I could ship them to Russia. And I'm like, yeah, sure, just buy them. And they're like, are you sure? And I'm like, I think I am. And then I checked and Australia Post doesn't ship to Russia. I didn't know that. I mean, it's an active war zone. Not really. It might be in a couple of years' time. But yeah, we can't ship to Russia. If you didn't know that, well, have I just blown your mind? Can't ship to America, or I won't ship to America. Let's get into that a bit later. But yeah, the makeup, the dolls. What else have I bought that's sort of girly? I mean, I've bought a Mimco wallet before. All I'm saying is that I really dislike walking past sections in a thrift store. If you're in a thrift store, you should be at every single section. I mean, you've driven all the way out there. You're taking all that time out of your day just to go to one specific section. You know how many thrift stores you'd need to go to strike a really good deal if you're just looking in, for example, the kids' toy sections? You would never fucking find anything. You'd have to go to 10, 15 different ones before you found something. And even then, you'd be picking, you know, the bottom of the barrel. So I try, or at least I'm trying, to expand a bit. And that means looking in the women's handbag section. And that's exactly what I did this week. And look, I don't know anything about women's handbags, okay? If you follow Flip Weekly on social media, you would know that the only thing I know about women's handbags is they store three things in there. They store muesli bars, they store healing crystals, and they store pawpaw cream, right? Only thing I know. Maybe my phone if I'm, don't have pockets in my pants. But look, that's all I know. However, I'm not dumb enough to realize that there's identifiers I can use when I'm looking at handbags to think, oh, this might be worth looking up. You know, I'm not going to be comping every single handbag that's on the shelves. I'm sure there would be some there that are worth a tiny bit of money, but I'm assuming most of them are just shit, right? That's why they were donated, because everyone like me just donates shit. So I see this handbag and I'm going through my criteria, I guess my internal criteria. We're looking at things like the quality, we're looking at the branding, we're looking at any sort of collaboration, which is what this handbag was. Now, in my line of work previously, I did a lot of branding. You know, I'm very observant of company logos, the color schemes, anything that comes with branding. You know, if I'm at a restaurant and I'm looking at their menu, my eye immediately is attracted to any spelling mistakes, because to me, that just lowers their brand's value, right? I just want quality. And when I'm looking at things like, I guess, this handbag, I'm wanting to see if this fucking bag is a quality made bag, or if it has the potential to be, you know, a good quality item that sells for a lot of money. So I see this thing. It's $18. It's within all of the other shitty fucking bags in this Vinnies. And it stands out because it's the only white handbag in this Vinnies, right? I mean, we're in North Sydney. There ain't much diversity. It's all these white handbags. So we see this white handbag. It has a few what looks to be like hand marks or like hand oil stains on the front of it. Does that make sense? It doesn't look like dirt. It just looks like someone's grotty mitts have been all over this fucking handbag. And that doesn't worry me, because I think, well, I should be able to get that out, right? Like, it's just cleaning a bag. And I can see that it has a front plate on it that says, that's like goldish. It's reflective, and it has the words Dooney and Burke on it. Never heard of that fucking brand before, but it's irrelevant. It's a zip-up bag. It has a strap, and I open it up, and in the inside, it looks almost brand new. I don't even see, like, any bits of fluff. I don't see any signs of use, and I'm opening up all the compartments. You know, there's an inner zip. There's, like, phone compartments. There's an outer area where you can put, I mean, some of those muesli bars, and, yeah, it just looks brand new. Apart from the grotty stains on the outside. And the print on the outside is what really grabbed my attention. It looked like hand-drawn sketches of Disney characters. I could see like banners that said Walt Disney World. I could see the castle. It looked like somebody had drawn all of these little things on the bag. It looked really cool. And I mean, all of those characters are instantly recognizable, and I can tell that they're Disney. And I mean, if you have a Disney adult in your life, friend, family, colleague, whatever, you would know just how much some of this Disney shit can be. They're spending so much money on this obsession with Disney. And don't get me wrong, I'm all for it. But I just knew that this could have the potential to be a really expensive handbag. You know, it had genuine leather on the outside, on the bottom of it, like where you sit the bag down so that the bag material doesn't touch the ground. It had like the leather corners on the bottom. So yeah, this bag is looking like it's gonna be good. And so I pick it up. It's $18. Why not? And I'm glad I did. I take the bag home. I give it a clean. All I did was grab some water and some napkins. And I just scrubbed the fuck out of the front of it. And it just came off. You know, no big deal. Easy. And it ended up looking brand new. It came out looking amazing in the photos. I thought the outside was like some leather material. You know, I don't know anything about fucking materials. It's one thing I struggle with. Someone's like, oh, what's this made out of? I'm like, fucked if I know, right? It turned out to be something called a polyvinyl coated cotton. Who knows what that actually means? But whatever it means, it felt genuine. Like, it felt good. And the reason why this ended up feeling like a really good quality bag is because it was a good quality bag. This brand, Dooney & Burke, you may have heard of if you're within the Disney sphere, but they've been making bags and accessories since 1975, and they started collaborating with Disney in 2009. And they actually have a current line on the Disney website right now, like the official Disney website. And when I looked those up, I thought those prices were absolutely insane. And that was before I realized they were in fucking USD. They're in American dollars. Once I converted that over to Australian dollars, I'm like, holy fuck, this brand's expensive. Just to give you an idea of how expensive this brand is, I checked it out on eBay, and I'll give you an example of one of their products, okay? Say you go to Disneyland, or say you're walking in some eclectic neighborhood, and you might see people wearing the Disney headbands. You know, they have the little Mickey Mouse ears, and they have a pattern on them. It's a Disney pattern. It's made by this company, Dooney & Burke. There are sold comps, and I'm talking like every single day, like multiple on the 11th of October, multiple on the 12th of October, you know, the past few days. They have, of those fucking headbands, literally it's the headband and two ears and maybe like a bow on the front. That is it. We have sold comps of just under $400. As far as I can tell, there's nothing special about it except it's made by this company. And obviously it has that Disney collaboration. So it has some of those prints. But what the fuck? Those fucking Disney headbands for $400. You can get plastic ones. I mean, if you get them from Disney, they're probably fucking $25-$30. But are you serious? Are you fucking serious? If you have a Disney adult in your life, do not show them this fucking brand. Because if they say, oh, you know, Matt, what I want for Christmas is some Disney ears. And you're like, yeah, sure, that's fine. Please make them Dooney & Burke. No, fuck off. $400, are you kidding me? Like, do you love Disney enough to spend $400 on a headband? Fuck that. So anyway, I do a bit of a dig into what this bag is, and it's a part of something called the Sketch line, which makes sense because the Disney characters look like they had been sketched on. And that line was originated back in 2014. So it originally cost, when it first came out, $198. Now that is US dollars, so we convert that over into our bogus currency, and that's $303. And like I said, it's a crossbody bag with leather corners, so it looks well made, it looks functional at least, but the thing is, it's not their most expensive bag. It really isn't. I actually went onto eBay, and out of sheer curiosity, I was like, what is their most expensive bag? Shall we check out what their most expensive bag is together? And some of the top listings, some of the most well-sold items were these like bag and wallet combinations. So I don't know if this is like a popular thing that girls have, is like a matching bag and a matching wallet. Okay. Now, us dudes can't speak to that. I'm pretty sure people under the age of 30 don't even carry wallets anymore. I know I carry a wallet, and every time I pull it out, I think that I'm showing my age, but I don't even think under 30s carry wallets anymore. So maybe this is geared towards older people. But anyway, some of the most expensive ones, and I'm talking the three that I just looked up, the bag and wallet combinations, they sold on eBay for an average of, get this, $2,445. Now, as a dude looking at this, the way I describe these bags, it just looks like a handbag and a wallet. I don't see where the price comes from. It has to be the brand and the collab. These are three collaborations with Disney. I mean, there's a print here of Lilo and Stitch. There's one of The Nightmare Before Christmas, and there's one of Cinderella. You know, I sometimes have seen people wearing similar sort of things, and they get them from the store that's like built into EB Games here in Australia, Zing. They buy them from Zing, and I don't know what the difference is, because I mean, it has to be the quality, but to me, looking at them, they look exactly the same as those sort of bags. So if you are like somebody that spends a lot of money on Disney stuff or handbags and wallets, take a look into this brand, because if you like to spend thousands of dollars on a handbag and a wallet, I mean, here's $3,000 that you can say goodbye to. The prints are, I guess they're cool. They're as cool as like a bag print can be, right? They don't look anything special. I mean, at least with the sketch bags, there's like some art there. There's an artist that has taken their time to sketch these out. The Lilo and Stitch bag and the Jack Skeleton bag, it just looks like a pattern that's been like printed all across it. It doesn't look like anything special. Yes, an artist originally created it, but what have they done? Just gone into their back catalog of prints for Lilo and Stitch and just plastered it on a bag? Like, it just, I don't know. The fucking value must come from how well this bag is made, but how well can you make a bag, right? Like you make it to a certain quality, how much more like high quality can you make it? You know, like, is it like 15 people stitching at one time? Like how much time goes into one? Anyway, doesn't really matter. The lesson here is, well, there's a few lessons here. The first lesson is fucking women's handbags. They pay a lot of money for this shit. Dooney and Burke and Disney, something to keep an eye out for. The second lesson is, don't go into a thrift store and just go to one specific section. Go to fucking all of them. Or if you've walked into a thrift store and you're like, oh, I've never been over here before, because, you know, it's where the women's makeup is or the women's handbags are, just go over there. See what there is. You know, you might feel a bit uncomfortable as like a dude looking at, you know, where the makeup is in Savers. There's also like bags of tampons and shit, but just fucking own it, man. Like, yeah, I'm looking at makeup. Who cares? Like, yeah, I'm buying this fucking this Disney handbag. Like, yes, the staff also ask about it. Like, they're going to ask you like questions like, oh, you'll look great with this. Like, the most generic, boring questions that a thrift store employee can ask you might give you eyes too, that you're buying a bag, but who cares? Honestly, who cares? If you're going to make money with it, for instance, with me, with this bag, $18 I bought it for, listed up on eBay for $150, marketplace $100. You know, there's nothing funny about making money, right? There's nothing funny about turning $18 into $100 or $150. Just fucking do it, okay? So, yeah, that's the lesson. And if you want to see photos of the bag, jump onto flipweekly.com, check out the newsletter. Or I'm pretty sure, yeah, I have a video up about finding this bag on social media. So that's TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram. Yeah, I don't actually have it on YouTube, so. But, yeah, that was a good find for this week. And it sort of like got me motivated to keep looking, right? Like, I'm in a thrift store, going from one to the other. Let's fucking like find some cool shit, you know? So I'm thinking like, yeah, let's go. Cool stuff. And then I get to this next item, which may be the world's most boring fucking television show of all time. And yet for some reason, it's still going. It's still being made. You know, like, if you thought that Matt cleaning a bag, that Matt finding a women's handbag was boring, just wait until you hear about this, okay? Because I want you to think at home, in the car, wherever you are right now, of the most dull topic imaginable, okay? Think boring, think dull, now think British. I have a buddy, and I swear to God, all he watches is British shows. And whenever I see them, I just think of, like, you know, English weather. Just fucking miserable 24 hours a day. People go outside wearing fucking tracky dacks, wearing sweatpants. I just think, like, that is the most depressing thing ever. And I know, I mean, I mentioned about feeling old before. I swear I heard something on social media in the past week that said the younger generation are only wearing sweatpants out, and that's, like, the cool thing to be doing. I don't think it's fucking cool. It just reminds me of being in fucking merry old England, where everyone is so miserable from the rainy weather that they're just wearing sweatpants. They can't be bothered to put on, like, big boy pants. So that's where we're heading. We're heading down the road of boring as fuck British television. So this is a television show that I could imagine just watching. Like, okay, this is what I imagine. I imagine I'm at my nan's house. It's a bright, sunny day, but I'm like a kid and I don't want to go outside, right? I don't want to, like, go play a sport. I don't want to, like, go hang out with anyone. I just want to sit inside and be fucking miserable. So I'd be at my nan's place, and, like, the sun is shining in through the window, but the blinds are shut, so you only get bits and pieces of that sun. And, like, it's a hot day, so all the doors are shut and it's stuffy, and we're just sitting there on the, like, these lounges that feel like we're sitting on carpet, and, you know, the TV's on, and then the next television show comes on, and it's this Great British Railway Journeys. Could they not even think of a more creative, fun sounding name? They've just come up with, like, something so generic. Like, if there was a show in Australia and it was just about, like, walking through Australia, like, walking from town to town, they'd call it, like Walking Australia. Like, the most boring fucking name. No thought has been put into it. Even the covers of the DVDs look exactly the same. And I know that most covers sort of look the same with DVDs, but these just look exactly the same. Just this, the host staring at the camera, smiling. And, I mean, it doesn't sound that bizarre, you know, like a host smiling at a camera like they're supposed to be doing, but it just looks so fucking boring. And maybe it's my childhood reliving that in my head of, like, staying inside at my nan's place, watching the most boring television. Of course, being a kid and the ads get put on pause, so we just have to sit there in silence and we're like, why is it so quiet? Why is the television being muted? Muted, not paused, sorry. But this television show, just, oh my God. I saw it and I've never seen it before in a thrift store. And that's one of the things that I do, is, like, if I've never seen it before, I'll look it up, because who knows what it could be worth. And I'm glad that I did, of course. But before I tell you the value on that, let me tell you, at the end of this episode, if I can be fucked, I'm going to be watching season 1, episode 1, the very first episode. It's available for free on YouTube. So if you want to tune in, but you can watch it with me, or you can just fucking skip it because it's going to be the most boring thing ever. But I'm going to be going through that. But just to get you into the mood, I'm going to tell you the official synopsis of this show. And, you know, I would give you my take on it, but the fucking description of the show, you can't make it sound more boring than what they already do, okay? This is what it is. From Wikipedia, cartographer George Bradshaw produced the first comprehensive timetable and travel guide of Great Britain's railway system in 1840. Armed with his Bradshaw's Guide, presenter Michael Portillo travels around the country by train, exploring the ways that society and industry have changed since the guide was first published during the Victorian era. And oh my fucking God, are you still there? Did you fall asleep? Are they trying to put people to sleep? It is so fucking boring. It's like saying that there's a travel guide here in Australia of, I don't know, where Angus and Malcolm Young from ACDC grew up. Like, that's now Villawood Detention Centre. Like, how fucking fun is that? You are travelling around Great Britain following a travel guide from 1840. It's going to be like oh, go see this cool farm. And now we'll be like, oh, look, it's a housing development lot. Or like, go travel to this old pub that existed in 1840. Oh, look, now it's a fucking real estate agency. It's how fucking boring can you be? And you're doing it all on a train. Like, you look out the window and it's just nothing. I can't understand how this is like a good idea. Is the show going to be talking about the trains that they're on too? Like, how much of the show is going to be dedicated to this guy just sitting on a train waiting to get off at the next stop? You know, do you want to follow somebody home from commuting? Do you want to commute? People in Australia commute fucking up to 4 hours a day. You know, 2 hours from home to work, 2 hours back. Do you want to go with them? This just sounds like fucking horrible show. But the thing is, people enjoy this shit because the show's been running nonstop for the past 15 years and new episodes are still being recorded to this day. Like, what the fuck? One of the more unusual things is, despite that apparent popularity, the market hasn't been flooded with copies of this on DVD because individual seasons of this show are selling for about $50 each, if not more. And you can find, if you can find the entire series on DVD, you can ask for close to $1,000, if not more. And the reason I say that is because on eBay right now, there isn't that many listings available. Like, when I say not many, there's not 1,000. There's like 100, maybe a tiny bit more. And there has been sold comps of series 1 to 11. You know, this has been going for 15 years, right? 15 seasons. From 1 to 11 for $750. Now, I found series 10 to 15. I paid $11.96 for them, and I've been able to list them up for $200. Okay, so that isn't $1,000. But if I found more of those DVDs in the thrift store, I mean, I think I paid like $2.99 each. I think that's what it works out to. I would be able to list it up for $1,000. And you best believe when I found season 10 to 15, I was scrubbing these DVDs looking for the rest. You know, even the spine of this DVD was boring. So I was just locked on. Where is like the boring fucking DVDs? And I unfortunately couldn't find them. I really couldn't. Like any TV show though, I got season 10 to 15 in. They're the latest series, so they tend to be more expensive. So if you find like series 1 to 5, you might not be able to get $50 each, but you'd still be able to get more money, or you'd be able to build towards getting the entire series. But like I said, again, this is the first time I've ever seen this on DVD in a thrift store, or at least when I can remember it. So maybe it's not that common to find, but it's one that you need to keep an eye out for. And if I find time, I will watch the episode, season 1, episode 1. If it's as boring as I think it is, God help me. If I'm completely wrong, I'll have to issue an apology to this show. But either way, Great British Railway Journeys. It's just, fucking hell. Just buy it if you see it. Make some money with it. Now, in this exact same thrift store, I swing from the DVDs, I swing to the CDs, I'm checking out the CDs, I'm always looking for a grand slam in the CD section. I'm always looking for like old video game music CDs. They're the ones that you can ask for like hundreds and hundreds of dollars. I just hope I'll find one of them one day. I didn't today, but what I did find was like a huge fucking hit of nostalgia. You know, I saw right near the video game section a big box protruding from that area. Now, it wasn't like a big box old school PC game that I found in the past. It was technically in a big box, though. And let me tell you, nothing sums up the early 2000s more than playing the fucking Sims on your desktop computer. This was the Sims Full House, all inside of the singular box. Now, look, I can't tell you how many fucking sleepovers I had at friends' places when I was a kid. We'd load up The Sims Hot Date, and we would spend hours and hours and hours trying to make our Sims fall in love. For lack of a better word, we'll say fall in love. And that original Sims game, not Hot Date, the original Sims game, the one that was first released in 2000, was one of the best-selling games of the year, and The Sims as a whole is like one of the fucking, it's a GOAT game, right? Greatest of all time. it itself is like one of the greatest, like highest selling fucking franchises of all time. And due to that initial popularity, when it was initially released in 2000, we had expansion packs that were released, and they were released over the next 3 years, and they added, you know, new characters, new features, new themes, all that sort of stuff. And there were 7 expansion packs that were released in total. So this box that I found, The Sims Full House, it contained the original game plus all those 7 expansion packs. And within that box, it came with like these 3 sleeves. They were sort of like wallets. They opened up, right? So inside of that, it had all of the discs, and I paid $5.49. And, you know, it had a rubber band on it. It had a bit of sticky tape, and, you know, I'm in Savers. And of course I took that sticky tape off. I took that rubber band off. I opened it up. I opened up all those sleeves, all those wallets, just to make sure that everything was inside. And fucking Eureka, it was. When I've talked about kids stuff in the past, you know, with the Polly Pockets, with anything that's like small or anything that kids fucking handle, this original box of The Sims, it was lost, it was destroyed, it was thrown out. And most kids, or at least most listings now, they aren't for this big box with the 3 wallets inside with all the discs. They're, you know, 1 wallet here, or like the 3 wallets plus it's missing a CD. And, you know, the comps for those, they're quite low. And for most Sims games, they are quite low, even if you get the original big box PC game of like one of the expansion packs, like The Sims Hot Date. They're not selling for that much money. However, this big box, The Sims Full House, which is complete with the 7 expansions in the box, it has a sold comp for $65. Now, that isn't crazy good. Like, that's not a crazy good return, right? Like, $5 into 65. Yet, there are no active listings for this at the moment. And I'm thinking I can chuck this up for $100 and I can see if it can sell. You know, I'm not competing with anyone else. All I'm competing against are the singular wallets that are missing discs. If somebody wants to buy The Sims plus all the expansion packs, they can get the individual games, or they can try and build a little collection with these wallets, or they can buy this box that I have that has everything inside ready to go. And, you know, we compare that with my past of buying the big box PC games, knowing there's a market with it, knowing from our, you know, eBay reselling experience that you're the only person with a specific copy so you can get more money for it. That's why I put it up on eBay for $100. And looking at the amount of views and the amount of watches that I have, and even looking at the ratio between those two, I would say that the price honestly isn't being scoffed at. I genuinely think it's going to be snatched up by somebody. I genuinely think it's going to sell. So that would be $5 into $100. Now, if we continue on, that might not sound like I've bought much for the week, but I'm going to go into what I sold, because it sort of blends the two together. Because I don't talk about everything that I buy, because I don't think it's interesting, right? Not that I'm saying, it's hard to say that everything I buy is interesting when I've just talked about something and I've titled this the most boring fucking thing in the face of the earth. But here's the thing. Last Thursday, I bought something that I knew that I couldn't fully test. And that's not good, right? If you can't test something, you can't sell it as working and you can't get as much money. But this item, I could only like half test it out. I mean, what the fuck am I talking about? What I'm talking about is my car doesn't have a cassette tape player, because this next item, you need a cassette tape player inside your car to test it out. And look, my car isn't brand new. It is old, but it's not that old that it takes a cassette tape. So what we have here is a marketplace pickup for $20. I was able to snag it with after 25 minutes had been live, and it is a Sony CD player, like a portable CD player car kit. So it has the personal CD player, like a Walkman, and it has the car kit. Now, before I go into a bit more about this, let me just tell you that I really wish that I could say this was before my time, but it really was not. Like, I grew up with my parents having a car with a cassette tape player, and we fucking got use out of it. We pumped that thing. I remember with Mum, it would always be like the audio recordings of Mr. Men. You remember Mr. Men? They're still around to this day. And the stories of Mr. Men, whoever was narrating that, he would like slowly fade out and like this really banger Mr. Men song would come on. And I've never been able to find that since, but I distinctly remember like this Mr. Men song just going really fucking hard. And I mean, we also had like John Farnham with Mum. We had, that's really all I remember with Mum, John Farnham and Mr. Men. Odd mix, but an even odder mix was what we had with Dad when we were in Dad's car. It would be like a constant loop of like Tina Arena, Meatloaf, and Shania Twain. And look, I have a really bad fucking memory. Like, I don't know if it's just been like years and years of abuse, but if I walk into a supermarket, I sometimes write down where I parked in notepad on my phone, right? Really bad fucking memory. But I could still recite like the entire lyrics to fucking Man, I Feel Like a Woman. Every time that comes on, I'm singing in my head and it's taking me back to being in the car with Dad, just listening to Shania Twain singing Man, I Feel Like a Woman. See, I'm not even kidding. I swear I could probably recite it to you, but I'm not going to make this fucking podcast even more boring by starting out with like going out tonight. Not going to do that. So I found this Sony Walkman. Sony Discman is what it was described as in the title. It was priced at just $20. You know, it's not just a Sony Discman. Like I said before, what I alluded to earlier was that it's actually, this is what my title was. It was a Sony Discman portable CD player kit. And it's worth a lot more than $20 because it doesn't just come with that portable CD player Walkman. It comes with that adapter so you can play CDs from that CD player into your tape deck. You know, I don't know how it worked, but it somehow worked. And back in the day, like back in the early 90s, like this would have been high tech. You know, instead of like upgrading your car, or updating your, you know, the cassette tape deck in your car, you would just buy this thing and you'd be able to play it all together. So the kit was pretty much complete. It was in like unusually good condition inside of the box. And $20 just seemed like a really good deal considering that it was fully boxed. So I drove out to get it. I took it home, tested it out, and it worked. You know, the CD player works. But of course, I can't go chuck that fucking adapter into my car. I can't, like, I don't have a cassette tape player in my car, so I have to sell this as, like, untested. But the thing is, very, very few comps for this. Like, it was a gamble, really. There was no guarantees it would work, and the sold listings, they were worthless. Like, there was none of this model boxed in the past 90 days. There was no real comparative listings in Australia or overseas, and that's the same with active listings. They didn't help because, you know, they were either like a different model or they were just the CD player by itself. So I just had to like chuck it up on eBay for what I thought would be the right amount of money. I chucked it up for $150 and it sold. It sold in record time too. Like it sold very, very quickly. And for it selling so quickly, I just have to think like, is the dude that bought this still rocking a cassette tape player in his car? Really? Like, is he the fucking coolest old man in his town? Or is he like a collector of some kind? Like, not as much fun as if he's a collector, but if he still has a cassette tape player in his car, hell yeah, that is so fucking cool. So this just really leads itself to, I mean, what's the lesson here, Matt? The lesson here is fucking Sony is such a good brand that people are still buying that shit to this day. It's that old tech is still valuable. You can still buy this shit today and people will buy it. And it's that if you were in a car listening to Shania Twain back in the 90s, you'd still remember it in 2025. I guess Shania is still a cultural icon and she should be respected. Moving on. Last week, I talked about turning off shipping to the United States and not receiving a single international sale since. But look, the thrift gods must have been listening because I got two this week, one to New Zealand, one to South Africa. And I'll talk to you about those in a second. But look, in terms of the shipping to the United States, I still haven't turned it back on yet. Now, one of those reasons is when I was at the post office the other day, I was talking to the manager of Auspost in you know, my area, we were just talking about the process. And I'm really old school when it comes to my shipping. I take my stuff into Australia Post and I put like everything in the bags and boxes there because I'm not organized enough to like have those things here at my place. I don't want to buy the boxes in bulk. I don't want to buy that padded mailer shit in bulk because it just takes up room. I know you would save money with it, but you know, my margins aren't so low that I need to, you know, be worried about spending an extra dollar here or there. Like, I really don't care about that, right? Not that they don't ask me every single time in an Australia Post if I've thought about buying this shit like online. I'm like, of course I have. I just have never done it. But yeah, we talked about like you need to be printing these labels off at home. And I'm like, well, I don't have a printer. They're like, well, we sell their printers here. And I'm like, if I can't be fucked to buy boxes to save money at home, I am not going to be buying a printer at home. You know what happens if I buy a printer at home? I would feel guilty about not printing things off. Like, I would have so much shit that I need to print that I don't know what I'm saying. I just don't want to buy a printer because it just leads to printing, which is more work. Yes, it would be less work than writing them out, but I feel like I'm going down a rabbit hole of if I get a printer, I'm going to be like doing stuff with it, which I don't want to be doing. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't want to be buying like weights for at home because then it leads to like working out, which is more work. Is this making sense? Like a label printer leads to doing stuff with it. A printer leads to doing stuff with it. I don't want to do anything with those things because I am lazy. So I don't want to be doing a printer. I don't want to be doing a printer. Fucking hell. Quality fucking podcast. I don't want to be doing that shit. And shipping off to America, the manager explicitly said you need to pay the tariffs up front, which is obviously a percentage of the amount of what you're selling. So if I sell something for $1,000 to the US, I have to pay the tariff up front. And from there, I don't really know exactly how it's going to work. I haven't looked into it that much because I haven't turned shipping back on yet or really thought about it. I am missing out on sales, yes. But from what I understand, I would have to pay that tariff and then the item is sent to America. And for it to leave customs in America, I mean, does the customer then pay the tariff and then I get like a refund or something? Is this how it works? I don't have any fucking idea. I love how complicated it's made things though. Like, I really love that. How fun is that? Instead of just shipping something off and being like, well, that's it. Now it's like, oh, you have to pay a tariff. You have to join Zonos.com. What the fuck is Zonos? Why is Australia Post working with Zonos? Ugh. Why can't I just ship things? How hard is it to ship something? How hard is it to fucking write out a fucking address on a parcel and send it off to America? Now I have to like buy a printer? Fuck you, I'm not buying a printer. Don't give me a printer either. Anyway, the two things that I sent off overseas this week. One, a Skylanders Supercharger starter pack. It is like a whole bunch of Skylanders figures inside of a box. It comes with a video game. And, you know, you can tell it's getting close to Christmas. 70 days, by the way, when items like this are going out the door. And I don't usually pick up Skylanders stuff because there's like a learning curve with identifying the valuable figures, that sort of shit. But when I came across like this sealed starter pack on Marketplace for $30, I knew I could flip it for over 100. So I'm like, why not? I'll just get this, sell it for $150 plus. I think the person paid $60 in postage to South Africa. Really expensive to ship to South Africa. So keep your eye out for this sort of stuff. I've found them in thrift stores and Marketplace before, and you can get good money for them. The other thing that was sending to New Zealand was this Underbelly Complete series. Now it's 6 series of Underbelly, the Australian television show. It came in like this tall box set. It was like the size of a big book, had 24 discs in it. Bought it for $10 in a Vinnies, sold for $100. And this is a television show that you don't want to sleep on. Not so much the individual cases of the DVD, but more so the box sets and the unusual sort of like tall, like this thing that I bought. Because the box sets by themselves, if you're lucky enough to find it brand new of Underbelly the Complete Collection, you'll be able to get between $200 and $300. There's a comp here on eBay that sold just last month for $367 in the UK. There's one here, $217. So this is a television show not to sleep on, but please do your comp research before picking up Underbelly, especially if you just find like a single DVD of Underbelly. I don't want to be the reason why you're stuck with like a fucking DVD that's worth like $5. So do your comp research and just know that when it comes to Underbelly, the bigger, the better. The bigger box sets. Yeah, just think that. Underbelly equals bigger box set equals bigger money. Don't buy the single ones. It's just not worth it. It might be worth it for you, not worth it for me. Remember, we're trying to get items that are selling for at least $100. Now, the next thing, I was nervous. I was really nervous. I was nervous to put on a belt. Have you ever been there before? Have you ever been nervous to put on a belt? Because that was me. I finally got around to ordering and installing the belt for a Sony Walkman. Now, I got all of these for free from Facebook Marketplace. I have sold all of them bar this one. It was just sitting on my desk for so long. I kept glancing at it thinking like, do something with Matt. Do something with that, Matt, you lazy fuck. And finally, I went online and I bought the belt for it. It's only $20 and it was delivered. And, you know, I'm extremely handy when it comes to repairing technology. Repairing these Walkmans, the only thing I know how to do is put on the new belt. And if that doesn't work, I'm shit out of luck. So I bought this belt. I installed it into the cassette tape player. And what do you know? It fucking worked. Like, what the fuck? The belt, a new belt in a Sony Walkman is like the ultimate cure, right? It's like, you know, when you're sick or you're feeling, you know, something's wrong with you and you know, your partner or your fucking parents or something, like, take some Panadol, you'll be fine. Like, have some water. It's the fucking, it's the ultimate cure, right? Have you tried putting on a new belt? Like, that is the cure for these Sony Walkmans. So I did that, it did the job, and it sold within 24 hours. I'm not kidding. This thing sold really fast. Like, I was working on it late at night. When I say working on it, it makes it sound like I'm fucking soldering this thing. No, I'm putting on a belt, which is equivalent of like installing the rubber band on the game Operation. I was doing this late at night. I listed it at midnight and it sold technically same day. So, and that was despite my horrible midnight photography. That was despite this Walkman having an LCD screen that had like a ton of dust and dirt behind it, and it didn't even like say the words correctly on the LCD screen. Like, instead of saying play, some of the pixels were missing, so it said flay. And that didn't even matter because it sold for $150 out the door. Somebody bought this $150. And I can't stress enough that if you can get these things cheap, buy them, even if they aren't working. So far, I think I've picked up four that weren't working, and three were repaired with a new belt, and one was sold for parts. And of course, I used, you know, the word repair loosely because it's fucking, you know, it's playing Operation with the belt, with the fucking, what's the part on Operation where you connect the rubber band? I think it's like connecting the knee bone to like the ankle bone or something. If you can do that, you can do this. Now, the next item is from a huge bundle, and the sales just keep on rolling in. This is technically $10 into $250, and it's another Polly Pocket. It is the Sparkling Mermaid Adventure Storybook. It is the Polly Pocket that looks like a miniature book. It had two dolls with it, so it wasn't even complete, and it's still selling for $250. So those sales are just rolling in, but don't get me wrong. I am still the dude in Sydney with the biggest Polly Pocket collection. So we have 22 left and they're worth a combined $2,120. Now, with only 70 days left until Christmas, sorry, I am really curious to see how many of those will sell between now and Christmas. What do you think? Like, we have 22 left. Will we sell like 5, 10, 20? Will we have a Christmas miracle and sell all of them? I would love to know. I wish I could fast forward till then to see how many we have left. I really think they're going to be a big Christmas, like, I don't know, big Christmas seller. Hopefully the Bratz dolls are too, because I haven't sold any of those Bratz dolls yet. So many people watching, not a single sale, which is sort of disappointing because, you know, I was hyping them up, especially that $1,000 set. But let's just see. They're still new to the market. Let's give people a bit more time to get to them. I think the same thing happened with the Polly Pockets. I think when this stuff comes to market, people need a bit of time to like convince themselves that they want to be spending like $250 on a Polly Pocket or $1,000 on Bratz dolls. Like they don't have that in their mind before they come up. Like nobody was thinking, you know, 2 weeks ago, I'm going to be spending $1,000 on two Bratz dolls. But now that it's up and people are watching, I think it's got like 20 people watching it. Some of those people would be thinking, am I going to be spending $1,000 on two Bratz dolls? Am I going to be sending this to my poor fucking boyfriend who has to spend $1,000 on two Bratz dolls or ruin Christmas? I don't know. But that's how I think it works. Like, especially when you're putting up things that are unique and rare and they aren't like needs, they're wants. People need time to like justify it to themselves or to like convince their partners to buy it for them. So we had a few other sales. I'm not going to get into them right now. Let's just move on to secondhand opinions, because last week we talked about all those fake Jellycats. And I asked you, have you ever bought or sold something that later turned out to be fake? And the results are in, and it's actually a tie between yes, lost money on it, and yes, didn't realize until later. So by the sounds of it, we've all got horror stories about buying fake shit. So, I mean, we have to be more careful when sourcing items. And this just leads me into me being careful, because I very rarely pick up NBA jerseys anymore. It's only because the market is completely flooded with fakes. Like, I've been to Thailand and I cannot tell you how many fucking NBA jerseys are there that are just all fake. And for some reason, Australians, I mean, I'm a fucking a part of it, but Australians love to go to some of these like Asian countries and pick up fake clothes, fake jerseys, bring them home, and then they're just donated to thrift stores eventually, and they're just shit quality. I mean, I would estimate that like 70% of the time that I pick one up in a thrift store, there's at least one question mark that's hanging over it, and that makes me doubt the authenticity of it. So I don't buy them because I don't want to be selling fakes. I sell jerseys regularly. People follow my profile on Facebook Marketplace, these jersey collectors. If I put up a fake one, it just ruins, you know, it ruins the reputation, even though, you know, I'm not saying I have a reputation for selling good quality authentic jerseys, but I don't want people to think I might be selling fakes, so I don't buy them. But this week, I was able to find one at a Lifeline that passed the test. And it was $18. It was a Golden State Warriors jersey, which is an NBA jersey. And it's a really, really nice Mitchell & Ness. Now, that's a really high quality brand for a jersey. The style of it was a hardwood classic swingman jersey. It's a rookie jersey for Steph Curry. So that's 2009 to 2010. Looked really nice. The wash tags looked good. The stitching was immaculate. And one of the best indicators for me with jerseys is the weight of them. If you own an authentic NBA jersey, pick it up and weigh it in one hand. And then when you go to the thrift store next time, pick up an NBA jersey and just feel the difference in the weight. Like, that is just like a huge indicator for me. Plus, of course, this one matched up perfectly with like all the authentic jerseys online. The wash tags were good, all that sort of shit. But this one, it didn't have like the best sell through rate on eBay. Most of them that were selling were selling because they're brand new, and this one that I have has some wear, but it's an uncommon jersey here in Australia. It's sort of rare, so I think I should be able to sell it by this time next week. We have comps on eBay up to $350, which were brand new. We also have brand new going down, depending on sizes, going down to about $168. There's one that sold that was a youth for $80. So, you know, I'm going to aim for about $100 on eBay, somewhere a bit lower on Marketplace. I'm just trying for a quick sale. And I mean, I paid $18. I'm not trying to get $300 out of this and sit on it until Christmas time. I just want quick money, and I think I should be able to get that. So yeah, that's it. I don't have a question for you this week, but If you want to stick around, I may or may not be checking out the Great British Railway Journeys Season 1, Episode 1. It would be on YouTube. I still don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. Maybe I'll grab a bourbon or something and sit down on the lounge and watch it. But stick around. If you can see there's time left on this podcast, then you know that I'm taking one for the team. I'm going to sit through and watch this fucking television show. If not, jump on over to social media. We're on YouTube, Facebook, Spotify, all those things. Give this podcast a like and a review. I really appreciate it. I'll see you again next week. Good luck in garage sales. Take care.
Flip, 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 flip. Flip Weekly.
All right, if you're still tuning in, this is a warning. You would want to stop unless you're going to follow along to Series 1, Episode 1 of Great British Railway Journeys. I promise it's going to be boring. So you're not going to want to be listening to this, okay? It's from Liverpool to Eccles, and just the fucking suburb name Eccles sounds boring. So you can, if you want to, jump onto YouTube, type in Great British Railway Journeys, and follow along for free. You know, you can watch it with me. We're going to do a countdown, and we can see what this show is all about. I've described it as the most boring show ever. I haven't watched a single second of it. So we need to back it up with something, right? So go grab a drink, grab some food, and have your phone handy, because you'll probably be scrolling through it within 30 seconds. So, let's fucking do this, right? Make sure it's recording and make sure we can press play. And here we go. All right. We're going to do the countdown now. So it's going to be 3, 2, 1, play, and you're going to press play when I say play. Okay? 3, 2, 1, play. And we're off. This beautiful train. 1940,
one man transformed travel in Britain.
Oh, okay.
His name was George Bradshaw, and his railway guides inspired the Victorians to take to the tracks.
Oh, nobody cares.
He told them where to travel, what to see.
Nobody cares about a railway fucking book.
I'm making 4 long journeys across the length and breadth of the country to see what remains of Bradshaw's Britain.
4 journeys, fucking 15 seasons and 15 years of this cunt's life. I bet he didn't think he would be doing this for 15 years. He said 4 journeys, so that's the intro over with. We have... Who's on a train?
In the 1840s, travelling by rail in Britain was really complicated. There were already 20,000 miles of track and more railway companies than we have today. But the only way you could find out the timetable was by going to your local station. Then in 1841, along came George Bradshaw, a map engraver from Manchester, who put the timetables together and produced the first handbook of Britain.
Oh, he put the timetables together. How cool is that?
I want to find out the extent to which the industries and the places and the types of people that Bradshaw wrote about still exist, and whether a Victorian handbook can help us to understand the way that the railways made us the people that we are today.
I cannot express how much I do not care about this.
I'll be learning the lingo in Liverpool.
The Beatles, Paul McCartney, very soft, sort of, how you doing, Michael, those things. And then you've got Lennon with his nasal sort of twang, the other noise.
Then, visiting the birthplace of the first steam locomotive, George Stephenson's Rocket.
George Stevenson's Rocket?
Astonishing event in railway and indeed world history.
What the fuck is that? Folding a what?
That's one of mine. You may
an Eccles cake? What the fuck is an Eccles cake? This guy's on the fucking... the smallest train I've ever seen. It's like a carriage. A single carriage.
West to east, starting from Liverpool. Along the oldest passenger railway in the world. On the line that was built to take cotton from Liverpool stops to Manchester's mills. After stopping at Skipton, I'll carry on across Yorkshire.
I'm worried not to breathe too loud.
Resort of Scarborough. Today I'll be covering the first 30 miles via Rainhill to Eccles. And my first stop is Lime Street Station in Liverpool.
What?
I'm now in the tunnel.
He's back on the train.
From Edge Hill into Liverpool Lime Street. long. It goes all the way under the city. And Bradshaw was incredibly impressed.
Oh, this book looks so boring. It literally looks like a Bible, but for train travel.
Those people that delivered the railway to the very heart of the city of Liverpool. Bradshaw marveled at the new railway line.
Oh, God.
He was even more impressed by Lime Street, one of the first stations ever built.
He said he's so impressed by Lime Street, it shows a picture of a guy like brushing his teeth with his finger. I don't know if I'm uncultured, I'm not impressed by this. It just looks like a fucking gymnasium. Like an outdoor fucking...
Liverpool has always been a vibrant city. In Bradshaw's day, it was a great port, second only to London. Today, its rich Victorian heritage sits alongside a shiny new Liverpool.
I hope you're enjoying this because we are 4 minutes into a fucking episode. Jesus.
I love the way this brand new glass building reflects the old Liverpool, the Liver building, one of the most famous buildings on Merseyside. Throughout its history, the docks, more than anything else, have shaped Liverpool's character.
This looks so dreary and dull.
Bradshaw's guide was struck by the huge numbers of people moving through.
Look at the weather. It's
Liverpool, as might be expected, is also a great emigrant port. As many as 206,000 people, for whose use 500,000 tons of shipping were required in 1851.
So interesting.
In the 19th century, millions of immigrants passed through Liverpool, leaving a mark on the city that's instantly recognisable, the Liverpool accent.
We're about to hear some people speaking in an accent.
I've sometimes struggled to understand it, so I've come for a lesson in Scouse with local author Peter Grant.
What?
That's a good start, isn't it?
That was an awkward handshake.
Where does this Liverpool accent come from?
It comes from this almost allegorical big melting pot, a big pan of accents thrown in.
I can't help but notice they're not on a train.
Put a spoon in there, stir it all up, and you've got little sparkles here and there, or little idiosyncratic little...
This guy's got some Boris Johnson hair on him.
Would there be a Scouse accent in those days?
They would have spoken it, but it wouldn't have been recognised till about 1890.
Is it a single accent?
You can actually...
Notice how this guy isn't impressed by him saying, I'm following this 19th century guide. It's like, who cares, mate? No one cares.
And this is
fuck, this guy needs a haircut.
You know, Stan Borden, the gin, he's from the north side. You have the Beatles, Paul McCartney, very soft, sort of, how are you doing, Michael, those things. And then you got Lennon with his nasal sort of twang, the adenoid. George talking out the side of his mouth, grotty. And Ringo's Thomas the Tank Engine. So all four, but all for different parts of the city.
You're sort of Professor Higgins of Scouse.
I like that. I think I'll bring out my...
This guy's married, by the way. He's got a wedding ring on.
So why don't you test me out on some Scouse words or phrases, and I'll see if I can follow you.
That fellow over there, he's bricking it.
That fellow over there is bricking it.
That's great, that's not like George.
That means that man over there is scared.
Scared, yeah, petrified, and it could have other connotations, but you know. Hey, la, you doing me head in?
Hey, la, you doing me head in? That means you, hey, boy, you're driving me crazy.
It's good, that's like an American pop song, that.
Hey, boy, the show's doing my head in.
Getting off the train at Edge Hill.
Yeah, in Liverpool, if you're getting off at Edge Hill, it's the last stop before Lime Street, but Scousers tend to use it as a sort of analogy to the...
This is episode one, and somehow a producer or an executive was like, let's renew it for episode two. And have 15 fucking more years.
This is going out at 6
AM or PM? 6:30. What in the fuck is that? What?
It's a very much a peasant working class type dish. Comes from Norway. We adopted this Norwegian dish, which was a
I know what it looks like. I know what you think it looks like. I don't know if I'd eat that.
And, you know, stop you getting scurvy.
Now, what do you say for Bon Appetit in Liverpool?
Have a good scram, lad.
Have a good scram, lad.
Oh.
What do you think?
I think it's very good. The beef has been shredded so that it just gives it a kind of real, kind of lovely, stringy texture, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've never really called that before.
I like, you know how I like my beef? Stringy.
So it's got everything in it.
So it's a very, very good metaphor for the ass.
Yes, absolutely.
I know what would happen if I ate this for lunchtime. I would be in the fucking bathroom all afternoon.
Norway. It seems everything in Liverpool originates somewhere else. Hello, guys. Nice to see you all. Are you all from Liverpool?
Yeah.
Do you like this?
Yeah, I love it.
What do you love about it?
The way it's so diverse.
Yes.
Everyone who's born in Liverpool is either Irish, Scottish, or Welsh descent. Yeah, they say that it's a combination of Irish.
A bit different to our Liverpool. God, how long have we been going for? 9 minutes, oh my god. Wonder how much these cunts make. The statue people that paint themselves silver. They can't be making that much money.
There was a lot of money coming in Bradshaw's time too. Liverpool grew into the most important port for the cotton trade, with 2 million bales passing through the docks every year. Across the Mersey, on the Wirral, there's another place Bradshaw talks about that I'm keen to see.
What do we even know about this Bradshaw guy? What if he was off his head while I was writing this book? He's just gone. Why is he even traveling from place to place? A cartographer. What is a cartographer?
He says it's not one of the largest. But then he goes on and says, but you know, as a model, it's owned to be one of the finest in England. And it did turn out to be a model because it was designed by Sir Joseph Paxton. And then an American called F.L. Olmsted came over. And he was inspired by this and designed Central Park in New York City.
What is he even talking about? I'm lost.
These rocks piled high and the trees raised up. It does have the feel of Central Park. And so you like to think all those people...
It has the feel of Central Park. Are you kidding me? It turns around to a dirty-ass lake. Nobody around.
Very familiar at the other side.
Is he seriously comparing this shithole to Central Park? Oh, look, this is what I was talking about with England. It's so fucking, like, gloomy.
For America, many carrying Irish refugees fleeing the potato famine. The trains brought people from all over Britain to Liverpool to board the emigrant ships. In the late 19th...
32,000 people have watched this.
Refugees passing through Liverpool were Jews, like Mervyn King.
Are you scrolling on your phone yet? Who is this guy?
When did your family come to the United Kingdom?
Oh my god.
1890s.
Oh.
From Riga in Latvia.
Now why were they leaving Latvia?
Probably because of the pogroms that were chased all the time in Latvia and Lithuania, which was then part of Russia.
They were being persecuted?
Yes.
As anti-Jewish riots took hold across Russia, over 2 million Jews fled Eastern Europe for America. Between the 1880s and 1920s, many of them traveled by boat to Hull, then caught the train to Liverpool on their way to New York.
They came to Liverpool, whole family, there were five of them, five children. And when they got to Liverpool, they settled in town on what was called Little Morton Street. It's been demolished since.
Oh, God.
my grandfather got a job.
What's that? Looks like the Titanic.
As they passed through Liverpool, many decided to stay, forming 1/10 of the city's population. These days, the Jewish
1/10 of the population. Jesus, don't sleep with anyone else.
His influence on Liverpool has been.
We've had 7 Jewish Lord Mayors, many councillors, of which I was a Conservative councillor, and we believe we give back as much as we take, if not more.
A great tradition of philanthropy.
We do our best.
Mervyn, thank you so much. That's been really interesting. Thank you for sharing.
Don't leave this guy here. I'm not confident he can walk. He's just going to go back to reading his book.
I'm now leaving Liverpool.
Yes, leaving Liverpool. Is it over? I cannot believe we have 15 more minutes. I feel like I'm wasting my life.
My train will take me to Rain Hill, along what is perhaps the most historic
railway. Back on the train.
In the world. Not surprisingly, the Bradshaw guides were really keen on railway history.
No shit.
The Liverpool and Manchester line was really the first on which was attempted the practical application of locomotive power for the transit of goods and passengers, and it is therefore prominently entitled to rank as the pioneer of those stupendous undertakings which have not only given a new stimulus to the mechanical and architectural genius of the age, but have enabled this country to take the lead of all others in these respects. The Victorians were immensely proud of their railways and immensely proud of their country.
Nowadays, I don't think they would be.
They had good reason to be. Before the railway, it took some 36 hours to cover the 30 miles by canal. This line cut journey times down to just 2 hours. A revolution.
A revolution. Again, he's on the world's smallest train. It has like 2 carriages.
Because railway history was made here.
Oh god, railway history. Nobody else has ever gotten off at this stop.
The world's first steam locomotive race.
Hey Christian.
How do you do? Hi.
I love to see you. Thank you very much. Why were there radio trials?
Well, essentially it was a very clever public relations exercise. Because they're building the Liverpool and Manchester Railway. They just about decided that they wanted locomotives rather than horses or stationary engines.
We have to read the comments after this.
Have a big launch of what was really a PR exercise, announcing several months in advance that there were going to be these trials for a locomotive in October 1829.
Set the scene for me. Were there bands and were there balloons and was there hullabaloo?
Oh, it was an absolutely huge event. There were people from Europe, from the United States. There was maybe 10,000-15,000 onlookers, but also all these foreign visitors who had come to see, you know, was this, the invention that was going to change the face of the world, and they were proved right. It was an absolutely astonishing event in railway and indeed world history.
World history.
George Stephenson,
look at this
chief
guy.
Engineer for the Liverpool to Manchester line, entered his steam locomotive, the Rocket. It won hands down, achieving a top speed of 29 miles per hour. The Rocket became the prototype for all.
What the fuck?
It was a one-iron horse race because the others blew up one by one.
Look, there's no one around. They're at a site that nobody gives a fuck about.
And crucially, the contract to build more locomotives. Manchester.
You paint a really vivid scene, and I wish I'd been there.
Christian, you'd wish you'd been there? Back in the fucking 1800s? Along the fucking famine, poverty, disease. I'm sure I'd fucking wait for you, mate. You know what I just realized? My YouTube feed's going to be all this fucking shit from now on.
Was president of the Board of Trade. He was a member of the cabinet. And at the opening ceremony, he was hit by Stephen.
to the train. They took him to Eccles, where I'm headed now.
Was that a movie based on this?
He died, and so a cabinet minister became the first railway fatality anywhere in the world.
He's back on the exact same train. Two fucking carriages. That is the weirdest looking train, man.
This stretch of railway is full of engineering firsts, like this Sankey Viaduct, built by...
I can't appreciate this. I really can't. I know I probably should, you know. But it's just so boring. It's just so boring. Oh God, I'm not.
This little village is prettily situated on the northern banks of the Irwell and environed by some of the most picturesque rambles. Sounds charming.
Sounds charming. Let's see the picturesque rambles, whatever the fuck that means. What does that mean? Just say mountains or... Jesus, it's a highway. This is what I was talking about. He's going to go to all these places and they're just going to be like housing developments. That's what happens, bro.
Followed up into the suburbs of Manchester. There are still some patches of greenery left, like the vast estate of Worsley Hall.
Oh, please don't take us to Worsley Hall.
The 16th century, but was remodeled in Victorian times and eventually turned into a pub. My Bradshaw's guide says it belonged to the celebrated Duke of Bridgewater.
Who's got a beer? He's going to join us. Spilling
and
it.
Its historic owner had a great interest in engineering. So tomorrow I should explore what was for Bradshaw a passion almost as great as railways. That's to say, canals.
Oh God, we only have 9 minutes left. This is free on YouTube and only has 32,000 views.
Bradshaw started his life.
Look at that disgusting creek. Canal, whatever.
And so Worsley was of great interest to him as the birthplace.
Ah, the birthplace of the canal.
Bradshaw's guide is interested in all great feats of construction. It says at this spot, the late Earl of Ellesmere inherited the vast estate of the celebrated Duke of Bridgewater.
Oh, I don't care. I do not care.
First made the subterranean canals here. They supply the coal mines below at a depth of 180 feet and wind in and out for about 18 miles. That prodigious feat of engineering must have inspired the railway builders of later years, and ironically, the railways were then to put the canals out of business.
Okay. Just get on with it, mate.
These underground waterways were part of the Bridgewater Canal system, arguably the first in Britain. They were built to carry coal directly from the Duke's mines of Worsley without going to the expense of bringing it to the surface. This pool is browny orange.
Pool.
Telling us that this water still comes up from the mine. You can't see much now, but from 1761, barges laden with coal would have emerged from there, and this pool would have been a hive of early industrial activity.
All right, but it's not. So let's move on. Keep going. Get back on the train. What is an Eccles cake? Yeah, let's get to some food. I can appreciate some food.
Ian Edmondson is the production director.
Let's hope it's a nice looking cake.
How long has your family been
involved? This guy looks fun.
I suppose it started in the 1920s when
Oh, he's making cake boring. Show us the fucking cake.
The local shops on the corners of the streets of Manchester. And then the family decided it would be better to get...
Why is he in a suit? He makes cakes.
Making the cakes.
Can we see how they're made?
Of course.
Yes, show us.
I'll show you the ingredients.
No! Don't show us the ingredients. Show us the fucking cakes.
Really, really good quality currant.
Oh, nobody cares. Our currants. Oh, nobody cares.
Just like champagne, where they don't allow... another grape to come out of that area.
Show us the cake.
Guarantee quality.
Yes, it is.
And then we've got sugar.
Oh, and then we've got the sugar.
That's all that's in the product. More sugar, more currant, brown sugar.
Brown sugar.
A bit of salt.
Salt.
And lots of butter.
Yep, show us the cake. All right, what do we got?
Wow, it's a whole different world, isn't it?
No, it's absolutely fantastic.
No, it's a factory.
What would it have been like?
What are they?
I don't know, 50, 60 years ago.
Well, the way that they made the cake 60 odd years ago would have been got a big round table, big pile of currants in the middle.
So it's like pastry and currants, like black currants. Oh, it looks like a mince pie. Looks complicated, bro. It's fucking folding pastry. How dumb are you? This is so British, these cakes. They do not look fun. They look like, where are like the donuts with smiley faces? This is just fruit in pastry. It's not difficult, bro. Put me in that fucking oven. End me.
This is where you really get the strong smell of the Eccles cake, isn't it?
Yeah, you get that fantastic smell. It's all the flavours coming together of the ingredients.
How many Eccles cakes are you producing?
We're producing about 150,000 Eccles cakes a day.
Jesus Christ.
It's probably in the top six most popular cakes.
That's about 40 billion a year or something.
Yes, I'll take your word for that. Would you like to try a Eccles cake?
I thought you'd never ask. Yes, please.
I don't think I'd like these.
Lovely aroma.
I think we
folded, by the way.
We have different definitions of cake.
No.
Of course he's going to say he likes it. He can't say it tastes like shit right in front of him.
It's wonderful. It's wicked. It's look at this lovely row of currants inside.
Can you taste the butter and the sugar?
You're kidding, of course I can. Absolutely buttery and sugary.
What a stupid question. Can you taste the butter and the sugar? That's all it is, bro.
Yeah,
can you?
The thing about it is this, it's the only Eccles cake you'll get in a supermarket that's made within 5 miles of Eccles.
The genuine article?
Of course, yes.
The delicious pastries became so popular, they were transported to markets up and down the country by train and sold on station platforms.
Oh, thank God, we're 3 minutes away.
Exported to America. West Indies, and were laced with brandy to help them last the journey.
That's how you sell them. Serve them with alcohol.
Into trouble. The apparently innocuous Eccles cake has been.
Look, he's the only one on the platform. Nobody cares about this stupid fucking town.
Cromwell banned the Eccles cake, and it got into trouble again in the 19th century because they used to put brandy in the cakes, and it's thought. But one railway driver got so drunk on eating Eccles cakes that he fell off his footplate. And thereafter, the sale of liquor and the sale of Eccles cakes was banned at all the stations.
Oh, he looks happy. Excited. Back on this fucking miniature train.
It wasn't only goods like the Eccles cake that the railways transported around the world.
I swear to God, I haven't seen a single kid yet. Everyone's been over the age of 40. It's literally the fucking Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Look at this train. It looks like an old folks train.
In a single lifetime, he saw how the railways changed industrialization and how they changed people's lives and how they brought about the exponential growth.
Where are all the kids and the young people? Far away from this fucking town. Look at how small that train is.
I'll be discovering how Manchester came to be known as Cottonopolis.
No.
By the end of the century, the Indians were getting Indian designs sent back from Manchester to India that maybe came from cotton that they'd grown originally. It was crazy.
It was crazy.
About Bradshaw the man and how he helped to unify time.
Each provincial city, like Birmingham, Manchester and so on, had their own time. And of course, this was liable to create great confusion with railway timetables.
And how the railways brought fish and chips to British...
At least they put some food stuff in it. That's at least somewhat interesting to me. Not interesting, but I don't know, it's like eye candy. Oh, look at that fucking backdrop. Well, that is it for the Great British Railway Journeys. Holy shit, I am so glad that's over. That may have been, I mean, that is literally the most boring thing I've ever seen in my entire life. What do we got for comments here? What are people talking about? We really love this show. Michael made me interested in traveling on the trains more often. I use them to commute to work today. No shit. This guy commutes to work. Oh my god. Absolutely love this series. Well, I can't say that there's anyone here that's watching it for the reasons we're watching it for. I don't think I'll be watching it from series 1, episode 1 to series 15. I cannot believe this cunt is still going on the trains. But I mean, thanks for, I honestly don't think anyone's still listening, but thanks for making it this far. I'm not going to apologize for calling it the most boring show in the entire world, because it lived up to that expectation. Thanks again. I'm going to end it here. I'm not sure if I mean like the podcast or end my life, because fuck that. Yeah, I'll see you next week. Let me know what you thought.
Flip, 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 flip weekly.